Karen Francisco, welcome to WBOI Presents.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
Just to provide some context for listeners, what would you say are some of the biggest differences between for-profit colleges and their community college or state school counterparts?
Well, the for-profit model is the main difference. Community colleges receive state subsidies, state support, whereas a for-profit college answers to shareholders. It operates for a profit, and there is no state support. There, a lot of tax dollars flow into for-profit or proprietary colleges through student aid, and that's why we all should be concerned about this issue. But in terms of the support for the university or for a college, for-profit don't receive a direct subsidy from state or federal government.
One other key difference would be student populations. Who do for-profit colleges serve?
They generally evolved as an option for non-traditional students. I mean, these are students not coming straight out of high school and into college, working adults, first-generation students who might be coming from a background where no one in the family attended college. It's more accessible. And they really, to their credit, they recognized a need there probably more quickly than independent colleges, for example, or public universities. The community colleges always have been set up that way. But for-profit colleges really made access a key proponent and actually did it very well.
Harrison College closed recently, and it seemed this surprised many people, enrolled students included. How did something like this come out of nowhere?
Well, every time one of these schools have closed, it seems to surprise the students. I think people watching the proprietary college sector weren't surprised. Probably enrollment's been dropping, for one thing, a kind of a combination of government influences on the for-profit sector. Also, just, I think, improvements in the economy. During the recession, a lot of people out of work, they decided to upgrade working skills, and that was very much a target audience for going back to school. They were out of work. There was student aid available, regardless of what age they were. I think during that time, and some other factors, enrollment boomed, but as the economy has improved and it was possible for these students to get good-paying jobs elsewhere, they didn't go back to college. So declining enrollment is what Harrison College has pointed to. In terms of students being surprised, this is so much an area of buyer beware. Not sure in some cases the students were fully informed of what risks they might be taking.
Harrison College is waiting for a meeting with the Commission on Higher Education to approve National American University teaching out some of their programs, most of them in healthcare.
Mm-hmm.
The meeting has been delayed to October 16th. Once there is a meeting, is a teach out by NAU something that's likely to be approved? Is there a precedent for this that we've seen before?
That seems to be the direction they're going. But my understanding is, in terms of the nursing students, the state nursing board has said that won't work, that National American University is not meet their standards. And again, this gets back to this buyer beware. National American University has its own set of problems. It's facing financial problems. They have an office in Indianapolis, but they are based in Rapid City, South Dakota. Its own enrollment is dwindling. I think it's down to from over 8,000 to about 5,600 students. Most recent SEC report showed it had an operating loss of $11.5 million in the last fiscal year. So again, students who are suddenly looking to National American University as sort of a solution to this Harrison College problem probably should look at other options as well.
Let's talk about some of those other options. What have other universities in Indiana and other institutions offered in the wake of the Harrison closure?
Yeah, a number have stepped up. University of St. Francis here in Fort Wayne, I think, was one of the first to step up. Ivy Tech is very much an active player in looking to help reach out to these students. Just about all of the independent colleges, I think, have expressed interest. Trine University, many of them have scholarship from endowments and other resources available to help. And of course, many of these students still can access student aid that they're still entitled to. So I'm sure there are some options there. The challenges become the credit transfer, and that's the part that universities are going to have to look at. But they really do seem to be doing all they can, and they have experience in this. Now, this is not the first time we've gone through this. Brown Mackey College closed, I believe, in 2015. ITT shut down, and those students, again, were looking for other options. So traditional universities and Ivy Tech have had some experience now in helping these displaced students. And so I guess if there's a silver lining to all this, it's that we've been through this before, and there's some track record here in helping these students. So that's a positive thing.
I think we would both agree then it is healthy to look at the issue of for-profit colleges with skepticism.
It is. Harrison College, I had a long, I think it's more than 100 years old, Indiana Business College was how it started, secretarial skills, shorthand, long, generally distinguished history in providing job training through the years. It just over the last couple of decades, it sort of moved into this model that we were seeing Brown Mackey and ITT and on a national level, Corinthian College and some of these for-profit schools chasing a population of students in other areas. And it became Harrison when they moved away from the business programs, although I believe they were still offering some, and got more into the medical fields, CNA training and those programs. I believe they also had a criminal justice program. I know in Indianapolis they had a culinary program that was generally pretty popular. But I think Harrison, it's a good school. And again, I would say it had this long history, and it really had a good track record of reaching these non-traditional students and setting up course schedules in a way that worked for students. And again, some of the traditional colleges weren't as good at that. They didn't offer the night classes that working adults need or families that needed childcare in order to go back to school. I think that's Harrison had a good track record, had good faculty and staff and training, better job placement success than some of the other colleges. So I think that's why it was able to survive a little bit longer. But again, a lot of changes at the federal level in terms of student aid and requirements, their success in placing students in jobs and looking at the cost. That's the other thing. I do think students are getting a little bit more savvy about the cost. Some of the other programs, Brown Mackey and ITT, they came under scrutiny for their marketing techniques. I never really heard any of that happening with Harrison College, but students often didn't realize that they could get very comparable training, a good sound education at Ivy Tech for a fraction of the cost of what they would pay at Harrison College, certainly at a Brown Mackey or ITT. I think students at a public university in particular would be shocked to know how much students at some of these proprietary colleges were paying and graduating after 2 years with tremendous amounts of debt and sometimes unable to find a job. Did a story several years ago about a Brown Mackey student who, well into her course of study, discovered that kind of jobs she hoped to get after she graduated, these employers didn't even want to talk to Brown Mackey graduates. They simply, if you have a degree from Brown Mackey, no, we're not interested. She had a tremendous amount of debt, and when she started looking at Ivy Tech, she'd used up all her financial aid eligibility. I think over time, the word's gotten out. Students have been a little more savvy about how to spend their student aid eligibility.
One last question on the issue of for-profit colleges. I wanted to talk a little bit about Purdue University Global. Purdue bought Kaplan University, and now this year they are offering services through Purdue Global. Do you think something like this is a new model that we could see coming from more for-profit universities in the future?
It could be. There are a lot of concerns and a lot of issues still to be worked out there. Some of Purdue Global's initial steps have been sort of awkward right off the bat. The non-disclosure agreements that they were requiring from faculty, there were some other issues with rules about arbitration, students signing away their rights to sue the university and agreeing to arbitration in the event of any sort of a difference. That's concerning. The president of Kaplan is now the chancellor of Purdue University Global. So they still, as the head of that program, it's an individual who very much firmly rooted in those proprietary college practices. And I know Purdue faculty, including those here at Purdue Fort Wayne, are watching this very closely and wondering how it's going to affect them. They're wondering about the, there wasn't a strong Purdue online program, as most universities over the years have developed an online education program. Purdue faculty are wondering how the online program and Purdue University Global are going to merge. They're concerned about, I believe, about some intellectual property questions and who has the rights to a syllabus and course lists and things like that. So there are some tremendous concerns and a lot of things still to be worked out. That said, it's certainly a good thing to have a player like Purdue University with its world-class reputation getting into this area of targeting specifically working adults. We've had Western Governors University. Indiana's been was a founding member of that organization, which really is aimed at helping really adults who are returning to college who might be a year or so many credits short of graduating and getting them along the way. And WGU has done some great work. Purdue can bring that to this segment. So I think some good can come out of it, but I suspect we're going to have more issues between where we're at now and where it's headed. Kaplan had its problems. It certainly did. I'm not sure all of those questions have been resolved to the satisfaction of Purdue faculty. I know the American Association of University Professors is watching this very closely and making sure that faculty are protected in this and that the quality of Purdue University Global is comparable to the quality of faculty at the existing Purdue University.
While I've got you here, Jennifer McCormick, the superintendent of public instruction here in Indiana, has announced she is not going to seek re-election. What was your reaction when you first heard that news?
I guess a bit surprised. It was sort of a doomsday assignment anyway, because legislative changes had made it such that she really could just seek one more term before that position goes from being selected by voters to an appointment from the governor's office. On the other hand, I heard her speak in Indianapolis and certainly sensed growing frustration on her part. And I had heard her at the same event a year earlier and was surprised how quickly, after just a few months in office, she seemed to be showing some frustration with the structure that she had been dealt. And again, in August, this past August, she was sort of, you could tell she was chafing a bit against some of the restraints put on her position in terms of what she could do, accountability for the voucher program, for example. So I'm not totally surprised, I guess, to find out that she wasn't going to seek a second term. I was surprised this past week when she even announced that she wasn't even interested in continuing to chair the State Board of Education when her term as chairman is up, the end of this year. That is a signal of tremendous frustration. But that is a structure that's been put in place. The State Board of Education, its authority over the last several years has been expanded. It really has constrained the office that she oversees at the Indiana Department of Education. So her authority as a statewide office holder, elected in her own right, along with the governor and secretary of state and other constitutional offices, very much affected by this.
What are your thoughts on the position going forward, not just after McCormick's tenure, but Glenda Ritz as well?
Well, I have concerns about it. A lot of arguments were made by legislators that Indiana was just among a handful of states that actually elected its top education official. But other states have elected members of their state board of education. And we're going to have a structure where we elect a governor, and he appoints the majority of the State Board of Education and appoints the head of the Department of Education, the state superintendent. So it's putting a lot of authority over education in the hands of one person. And over the years, it's been a few years, but over the years, we've had a lot of people run for governor and promise to be the education governor. And some have given a lot of attention to education. I have concerns about where education in the state of Indiana is headed, and a fear that it's moving away from traditional education, general education, and more towards workforce training. I think a lot of resources in the state are being shifted to workforce training, and it's not all bad. I think some of that was needed. We had gotten away from some of that, but I'm not sure with the changing work environment that we have, and everyone talks about how the jobs we have today are not the jobs we'll know tomorrow. So training students for a particular job today is not going to suit them in 15, 20, 30 years. And are they going to have the general broad knowledge that they need, or are they going to be left with skills that don't serve them? And I'm not sure who has the most influence in education right now, but I do fear that it's more the Chamber of Commerce, its employers, rather than people saying, you know, we need to make sure our students have a very broad base of knowledge so that they'll be able to adapt to changes over time. And I guess that would be my greatest concern.
Karen Francisco from the Fort Wayne Journal Gazette, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you. I enjoyed it.